Hey everyone, this is Tony Reeves, and this is a Reeves Reflection. Today I want to talk to you about what it means to underestimate your brilliance. You know, I'll be honest, my mom used to always tell me growing up that she never had to brag on me because so many other people used to brag to her about me. So it's kind of funny because I didn't have one of those parents who would shower you with compliments about how smart you are or the great things you're doing. And I, every now and then I would ask mom about that. I was like, you know, I've never heard you say anything. And she's like, you know, Tony, I never have to worry about, you know, I've never been one of those parents who has to brag to, oh, my child is this. Oh, you know, my child is that. You know, my child is this. Because she said, I've been very blessed because people would come to me and say, did you know that Tony did you? You know Tony did that? And I can tell you that, and this is not a fault of hers, I never heard any of those things. So for, you know, for a while, I think I've talked about other ones, other podcasts or even videos about how I felt that I was, you know, I didn't necessarily think I was that brilliant when it came to certain things. And so I can tell you that there have been more than enough times where I would do stuff and even I was surprised that I was able to do it. Which brings me to this particular point. So I remember, you know, when you're in college, one of the things that one of the jobs that they have available is to call a resident advisor or a resident assistant, which is usually a student who's responsible for the well-being of the students on their floor. They do various in-service programs to benefit them. They you know, do room inspections. They are responsible for getting them out of the rooms with regards to any fire alarms. They're there to make sure there's no parties there and so forth. It is a serious responsibility, and not everybody gets the job. And I can tell you, invariably, you know, you usually find juniors and seniors who are resident advisors or resident assistants. It's very, 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 very rare to find a sophomore. And I can tell you, I was one of those rare ones. But I can tell you, if you would have told me that, I would never have believed you. So my freshman year, the end of the freshman year, I'm getting ready. Of course, as I've said in a couple of other podcasts, here I am at this expensive school. And so I decide, you know, everybody was like, oh, you know, RA jobs, you only interview for those once a year, and they are coveted positions. Part of the reason why they're coveted is because you get your own room. That's probably the big, you know, there's two big perks about it. Perk number one is you get, you know, a stipend, like $3,500, something like that. Perk number two, you get your own room. Now, for me, it was an added bonus because it's an ROTC cadet on ROTC scholarship. I was lucky because as an ROTC basically takes care of all, it takes care of room and board. It's a weird thing. At University of Tampa, it was a two-pronged thing. If you got the ROTC scholarship, that took care of tuition. And UT had this partnership with the United States Army and the Air Force, because they had ROTC as well. If you got a scholarship, they would pay for a room and board. So that literally means $3,500 a year was my money. And it's like, that was paid to me. Normally, if I wasn't in ROTC, that money would go to paying the room and board. So it was a sweet position. So I applied to be an RA, and I will be honest, I didn't think I had a snowball's chance in hell. I really didn't. And so because I didn't think I had a snowball's chance in hell, I really did not put a whole lot of effort or stock in my interview. So here we go. And I go through the process. I file the application. You know, a lot of people applied. You're like, okay. And I'm getting told, okay, you're being offered an opportunity to interview. So I'm like, okay, cool. No big deal. So, you know, I'm going over and the interview is in the upper class apartments, you know, their clubhouse. So I go over there and not even the clubhouse. It was in the upper class. It was in the hall director's apartment, which is attached to the clubhouse. And so, and I still remember her, Pamela Cunningham, love her to death. And she was the one facilitating, and she had a room full of upperclassmen who were interviewing me. And I don't know how I did, but I do remember two particular responses that I gave that still resonate with me all these years later. So someone asked the question, is there anything that any resident could do that would offend you? I was like, well, not unless you burn a cross in front of my door. And that made them laugh because I guess that was such an outlandish thing to say. And I said it nonchalantly. And they were like somebody followed up quick and said, yeah, so what would you do there? And I said, what would I do? I said, you know, to be honest, I don't necessarily think I'd have to do anything. I'd like to believe that on the floor, and the culture that I set on the floor, that the residents themselves would go upon themselves to find out who would have the audacity to do anything like that and engage them to say, this is not the kind of culture we want on our floor. So for purposes in terms of what would I do, I don't think I would have to do anything. I would think that, like I said, if I did a great job of creating the culture whereby that type of behavior is not tolerated, I think it fixes itself without me having to do anything. And I can still remember the look on the face. And you're thinking, damn, you remember that response? I said, I remember that response because I remember my dumbass walking out the door going, why the hell did I say that? Because in my mind, I was being cute, but I literally meant what I said. So I remember everybody kind of smirk like, okay, that's different. And the other thing that I remember was right after that, leaning forward and saying, all right, got any more questions? What you got? And they all started laughing. And they were like, no, you're good. I said, okay, we good? We straight? Okay, thank you very much. And I walked out the door. And I had to laugh because in my mind, I butchered that interview. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't know what my score was. Don't get me wrong. But I can tell you, I don't know if it was Pamela or somebody had said that it was the interview that really caught everybody's attention. This is just the level of confidence that I displayed. And I'm thinking, if you had a clue how much crap I was shooting because I was petrified, let me take that lie back. I wasn't petrified because I didn't think I was going to get it. I didn't think I was going to get that far. And so here's a situation where I was put in an awesome situation and I just didn't care because I had convinced myself that I am not qualified for it. So if I'm not qualified for it, no harm, no foul. But it's so funny because in retrospect, it's easy for me to be flippant and be like, no big deal. But the reality was, because I had convinced myself that the likelihood of me getting an offer was slim, I was not fearful. I was not afraid. I was not anxious. I was not paranoid. I was not nervous. I was completely relaxed. And because I was completely relaxed, I was able to give them the chance to see me as anyone would normally see me. As somebody once told me, Grandmaster Baker once told me this years ago, he was like, the most dangerous fighter is a relaxed fighter. I'm like, why is that? Because a relaxed fighter is a faster fighter because they are not worried about anything. Because think about people. Think about how loose you are when you're doing something that comes natural. When you do something that comes natural, if you're naturally a good cook, naturally a good pianist, naturally a good carpenter, that's not work to you. It's easy because it comes naturally. I can tell you that when I was in that interview, I was being me. So they didn't see somebody who acted like, well, you know, if I was in that position, I would sternly look at them. No, I was nonchalant because I didn't think I'd get it. So there was no reason for them not to see me. And because they saw me being me enabled me to get the job. And it was fascinating because in our third year, one of the things we had to do during our RA training was we had to give RA presentations and everything like that. And I remember a couple of the hall directors giving me some great compliments. They said, yeah, they did a real good job of getting you. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what they saw back then that made them believe confidently I could do the job, or that they had any indication I would evolve into becoming the person that I would become. But because they were willing to take that risk, because they were willing to trust what they saw something that I myself did not see. And that happens a lot in our lives, where we underestimate really how brilliant we are because we've convinced ourselves that nobody really appreciates what we're capable of, or we don't even appreciate what we're capable of until we're put into a position where what we do that comes easily is awe-inspiring to those who've never seen it before. This is Tony Reeves, and that is my reflection.